Welcome to this podcast from Christ Church London. For more information and resources, please go to christchurchlondon.org.
Thanks, Andy. Hello, everyone. The first thing I must do is apologise to you because this is the first time I managed to get here. I've been trying to get here for the last 4 months and this is the first time. So sorry it has taken so long. Actually, as I came out of the tube, I realised I've been here in this exact area twice before, but both with the fire brigade. I used to be a fireman. So the first time was trying to rescue someone who was under a tube, the tube station. The second time was Nico's Cafe. Anyone been to Nico's? It's directly opposite. They do an Olympian breakfast. We came here after a night shift and it is more meat than you could ever possibly eat. But we tried to eat it all and we succeeded. So that's my two memories of this place, but it's nice to have this as another thing to add to that. So yes, we are returning to our Heart of the Matter series after a three-week break. I don't know what you guys did here. And as Andy said, we're going to be looking at a topic this evening that probably isn't going to make it into your top 10 list of things that I want to talk about at church. And that is we're going to be looking at the whole area of loss and grief. We think that it's not enough for a church to think about the quote-unquote spiritual, just the spiritual parts of our lives. If we want to be a community that flourishes and thrives and helps others to flourish and thrive, we need to look at the emotional stuff too and work out how we handle our emotions well. And so, actually, in an effort to add a little levity to the night's proceedings, I've retitled my talk, Good Grief. So this evening, we'll be looking at good grief. And while this won't be a laugh a minute talk, I do hope that it will be helpful both to those of us who are currently experiencing loss and grief, but to all of us as we prepare for that. Because the sad truth is that this side of eternity, all of us are going to suffer loss of one kind or another. For some of us, that will be a devastating loss, like the loss of a loved one, or a traumatic breakup, or an illness, a life-changing illness. But for others of us, it may be the less kind of life-altering, less devastating losses. Things like friends moving on, things like not getting that job that we applied for, things like getting older and the life that we had changing. And these things are all, in some sense, a natural part of life. They are expected in some way, but they are still losses. They're things that we had, which we no longer have, or things that we wanted, which we never got. And so whilst I think there's a permission to grieve the big things, we also need to give ourselves and our community the permission to grieve those small things as well. A few years ago, I went on a stag weekend to Snowdonia, and we spent the Saturday climbing up a mountain. And because this was a stag do, and apparently in the UK, the way that men show their love for one another is to do mean things to one another on their stag do. Never quite understood why that was. But the stag was given a rucksack. And so as Sam climbed the mountain, at points, he'll be asked questions about his fiancée, Carola. And every question that he got wrong, we just pick up a rock and put it in the backpack. And as you can imagine, those questions were impossible. There was no way he was answering this question. So he just ended up with this like huge rucksack fully weighed down by all these rocks. So the rest of us were having a great time, like really enjoying the walk, enjoying the view, like having these great conversations. And Sam was just having the worst workout of his life. I mean, all he could do was put one foot in front of the other. That's it. Like, wasn't really engaging in conversation, like wasn't really taking in the view. He was sweating, his legs were aching, he was breathing hard. And I think that that's a little like what unresolved grief can do to us. It can weigh us down. It can come between us and those around us. It can even come between us and God. And it can leave us in a place where all we can do is put one foot in front of the other, just trying to reach the top of the mountain, not really enjoying life. This is a sculpture by the artist Celeste Roberge. And I think it perfectly captures this feeling of being weighed down by our losses. Not just loss, but losses. I wonder if anyone can relate to this. Anyone has an experience of this? I can. I've experienced this in a relationship breakup. I've experienced this when several of our best friends moved out of London, all pretty much at the same time. But I think my darkest, my heaviest time came about 6 years ago. Jax, my wife and I, we've been married for a long time. We've been married for 8 years at that point. And we have been trying and failing to get pregnant for a while. We'd done all of the tests. Nothing was apparently wrong. Doctors said it was unexplained infertility, which has to be the least helpful diagnosis ever. So imagine applying for your dream job every month and then waiting to hear if you got shortlisted and then finding out that you didn't only because the call never came. And that's what it was like, this cycle of hope and anticipation and then despair and discouragement. Month after month after month, loss after loss after loss. And it just started to weigh me down because I didn't realize that I needed to grieve those losses. And then one day, completely out of the blue, well, not completely out of the blue, obviously, but one day we got pregnant. It was just amazing. As you can imagine, we were just so excited. We pretty much started telling people straight away, like perceived wisdom is you wait 8 weeks. We started telling people straight away. Our friends and family had been praying with us for years for this. And so we told them and we laughed together and we cried together and we celebrated and we thanked God. It was just amazing. But sadly, it was not to be. A few months into the pregnancy, Jack started bleeding. And so we went into A&E, and then later on that night, the doctors confirmed that she had miscarried and that we had lost our baby. And our world just came crashing down. And at first, I think that we did okay with not being okay. So we took time off work. We spent those first few weeks pretty much constantly in tears. But then kind of life just continued, and things moved on, and we had to just get on with stuff. It was when the baby's due date arrived that things really started to go downhill for me because I tried to treat it just like any other day, but it really wasn't just like any other day. And instead of taking a moment to stop and grieve, I just carried on, and it was like this huge weight had been put upon me. And I didn't do anything to try and get rid of it because doing that would have meant engaging with all of this sadness, all of this confusion, all of this doubt, all of this hurt and anger. And I just couldn't do that. I couldn't go there. And so for months, I just walked around, weighed down. All I could do was put one foot in front of the other. It affected my relationships. It affected my relationship with God. It took me a long time to learn how to grieve that loss properly. But by God's grace, he's helped me through that process. And it is my hope that we as a community learn how to grieve a lot better than I did. And to help us to do that, tonight we're going to look at a very well-known story from the Gospel of John, John chapter 11. We're going to look at the story of Jesus raising this guy called Lazarus from the dead. So this is probably a story that most of us have heard the headlines of, if not the detail. Lazarus is the younger brother of two sisters, Mary and Martha, and the three of them are effectively Jesus' best friends. Outside of the disciples, these are the three that Jesus spends most of his time with. Whenever he's in town, he stays with them. They're like family to him. And so when Lazarus gets sick, the sisters send word to Jesus, come here and heal him, basically. That's what they wanted him to do. That's what they expected to do. And quite surprisingly, Jesus doesn't come straight away. In fact, he waits so long, but by the time he gets there, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. I'm going to pick up the story in verse 20. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Martha gives it to Jesus straight. I mean, she's still respectful. She still calls him Lord, but she calls him out on his lateness. She goes on, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. At first it looks like that maybe Martha is hoping that Jesus can still do something about this, but as soon as Jesus kind of raises the whole idea of resurrection, her mind goes straight to the last day, the end day, the day where all of history gets wrapped up and eternity begins. And I guess probably like many of us, our understanding is that yes, one day everything is going to get sorted out. One day when I die or when Jesus comes back and I get to be with him for all eternity in the new heavens and the new earth, then that everything will be fine. But until that point, we just have to make the best of a bad situation and just keep on going one foot in front of the other. Verse 25, but Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. Martha believes that Jesus is the promised Messiah, come to make everything new someday. But the truth of that just doesn't seem to help the pain she is in right now. What about now, Jesus? Paradise when we die is all very well, but what about the pain I am feeling now? What can you do for me now? What good are you to me now? Have you ever thought that? So then Martha goes back to Mary, and Mary comes out to meet Jesus. And we skip forward to verse 32. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." It's the same statement, but this time it comes with uncontrolled grief, with tears, with weeping, just raw emotion. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he, who opened the eyes of the blind man, have kept this man from dying?" That's the question behind the sister's statement. If Jesus loved them, why did this happen? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. In fact, the Greek word there for deeply moved is way stronger than that. Jesus is angry. He is angry at death, angry at the havoc that death causes, angry at the way it steals from and destroys the pinnacle of his creation, the thing that he loves most in all of his creation, and that is us. The tomb was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, "You probably want to take off the grave clothes and let him go." If you grew up in church like I did, you're probably very familiar with this story. It's a story that kids workers love to do because it's fun, isn't it? Like, you have someone who can like wrap up in toilet paper and they come out of the tomb all dressed like a mummy and they're alive. Amazing. And I'd always seen the point of this story is just kind of supporting the claim from Jesus that he was the Son of God. But recently, thanks to a talk by an American pastor called Judah Smith, I've come to see how this story can teach us so much with regards to dealing with loss and grief. Firstly, and this is so important for us to hear, it teaches us that being loved by Jesus and having faith in Jesus will not keep us from experiencing losses that can devastate us. Everyone will suffer loss. You would have thought that if anyone could skip through life carefree, anyone had a free pass, it would be the best friends of Jesus, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, the family that Jesus loved. And they were so certain of his love for them that when they sent messages to Jesus that Lazarus was sick, they didn't even name him. They just got the messenger to say, "Jesus, the one that you love is sick." They knew that Jesus would go straight to Lazarus. He loved him so much. And then not only is this family loved by Jesus, but they are a family full of faith. They had complete confidence that Jesus was not only able to heal, but that he would heal. They'd seen it before. They'd been around when Jesus had healed everyone who had come to him. They had complete confidence that Jesus would come and that he would heal Lazarus. So they knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that they were loved by God, and they had faith in God. And yet Lazarus still died. If you ever needed evidence that bad things, really bad things, will happen to those who love and trust in Jesus, then here it is, Exhibit A. Lesson number one of this story is that followers of Jesus are not insulated or exempted from experiencing loss. And it is so important that we hear this and understand it so that we are prepared for it when it does happen to us. And when loss does come our way, we don't think either God doesn't love us or this has happened because I don't have enough faith. Which is actually really just two ways of saying the same thing. Because if you think that God's love for you is dependent upon your faith, then you don't really believe that God loves you. You believe that he rewards your spiritual effort, that he's only willing to bless you when you measure up to some standard. Friends, that's just so not the way it is with Jesus. His love for you is relentless, it is unconditional, it is extravagant, it is lavish. It blazes as hot as the sun. Just think of what that love drove him to do, to leave the paradise of heaven and be born as a baby on earth and live as a man and die on a cross, all to rescue you. And the hard thing to do, and I'm not kidding, when at times it can seem impossible, is to hold on to the truth that Jesus loves us when everything in our life seems to be saying the opposite. And the thoughts start coming. In my experience, it is just those little thoughts. It's not a big, loud, brash voice, God doesn't love you. It's the little thoughts, the niggling thoughts, kind of on the edge of your consciousness, barely perceptible thoughts that you kind of feel more than you hear. And if you don't deal with those thoughts, if you don't point at them and turn a light on them and engage with them and tell them to speak up and then deal with them, they will just stay there. And they'll whisper over and over again to you, God doesn't love you. And if he did, this wouldn't have happened. Or they whisper, actually, this is really your fault. If you were righteous enough, if you had enough faith, then God would have answered your prayer. And the tragedy of listening to those lies is that your loss ends up becoming 100 times heavier, because instead of going to God and asking him to help you deal with it, we turn away from God and try and deal with it on our own. Friends, this story teaches us that those who are loved by Jesus and who trust in him will suffer loss, and so we shouldn't be surprised when we too suffer loss. It's not because God doesn't love us. It's not got anything to do with our faith. This is just the way it is this side of eternity. We all suffer loss, maybe not with the same intensity, maybe nothing like this, but we will all suffer loss. And so we need to be a people, a community that knows how to handle that loss and how to grieve well. And so how do we do that? Well, I think that Mary gives us an amazing example of someone who grieves well. Firstly, she takes time to grieve. And secondly, she takes her grief to Jesus. Jewish custom both then and actually now is for the family of the bereaved to stay at home for 7 days, to kind of lock themselves away and just grieve and just express emotion and just feel the loss. They're not expected to do anything else, just do that. And I think we can learn from that grieving isn't something that can happen just as normal life happens. Grieving isn't something that happens by accident. Grieving is something that we have to give time to, something that we have to be intentional about. And the temptation for all of us is to try and ignore it, try to just carry on, try to keep busy, try just to not think about it. So we maybe turn to work, and we just work all the hours God sends us, or we make sure we're around people the whole time, or we just watch box set after box set after box set, or we spend hours scrolling through other people's feeds, or we go shopping, or we have sex, or we drink alcohol, all to numb this pain or to ignore this pain. But all that does is put off dealing with it. You know the saying, time is a healer? That's just not true. I mean, it's partially truth. It does take time to heal, but time by itself isn't going to get the job done. Without grieving our losses properly, without actively and intentionally making space to think and to talk and to pray and to cry, our pain just stays there. We may be able to push it down deep. We may be able to numb it for a long time and ignore it for a long time, but sooner or later, it will come to the surface again, and usually at the most inconvenient of times. This kind of thing happened to me after we lost the baby. I just tried to ignore it. But then this strange thing kept on happening. Every time I'd watch a film where anyone risked their life to save someone else, I'd find myself welling up. I mean, it got quite embarrassing. I'd be watching a film and I'd like do that thing that you do where you don't want other people to know that you're crying at a film, and you just hold your breath. Well, the point of like holding your breath is at some point you have to breathe in, and the only way to breathe in is to breathe out. And so you end up going, and everyone like turns around and looks at you, and you like try and pretend that you're sneezing or something. This was happening to me all the time. I had no idea what was going on. And then one night I was watching a film at home. Jax was out. I'd been flicking through the channels, and the Perfect Storm was on. Anyone seen The Perfect Storm? Came out in 2000. Wouldn't be surprised if none of you have. It's not the best film. It's okay. George Clooney's like one of his first feature films. Anyway, so I'm watching this, and in surprise, surprise, there's this super big storm in it. And one of the plot lines of this helicopter Coast Guard crew going out to rescue a family on a yacht. And they manage to rescue the family, and then in very bad CGI, the helicopter gets hit by a wave. supposed to be a true story. Don't know how true this is. And the helicopter ditches into the sea, and the rescue swimmer manages to rescue the pilot, and they're waiting there for the big Coast Guard ship to come and rescue them. And the ship gets there, and they drop over like this netting over the side. And so the rescue swimmer swims through like this huge swell to get them to the ship, and they start climbing up, and then this huge wave knocks the side of the ship, and the rescue swimmer hangs on, and the pilot gets washed out. And all the crew of the ship are saying to the rescue swimmer, forget him, he's gone, save yourself, we need to get going, there's no time. And the rescue swimmer looks up at safety, and he looks at his friends like being washed out to sea, and he dives in to rescue him. And I am just in pieces at this. I mean, there's no one around, so I am openly sobbing. And then I start laughing. I was like, this is absurd. Why am I so emotionally invested in this one story? This is crazy. And I start praying, like, God, what is going on? Why is it that every time I watch a film like this, like, I break down? And this thought came, and I know it was God, because there was no way I would think of this. The thought was this, and I may cry. It's because you couldn't save your baby. Wow. That was this whole area of grief that I had just never dealt with. The feeling of utter helplessness, not being in control, a feeling of guilt that I could have, I should have done more. And that night, God put his finger on it and helped the really slow, painful process of grieving. And yes, it was really painful, but it was necessary. Necessary to deal with this stuff, otherwise it just stays there festering. So Mary is a great example to us of someone who takes time to grieve, but even more importantly, she takes her grief to Jesus. Eventually, anyway. When word first gets to the sisters, Martha goes out to meet Jesus, but Mary stays at home. It's like she's just too raw, too angry to even go and see him. She just can't deal with that yet. And do you know how Jesus deals with her? He doesn't intrude upon her grief, doesn't come and force her to confront him by just turning up at her door. He invites her out to come and be with him. He understands that she is not only feeling the loss of her brother, but she is confused. She is doubting. She feels let down by him. And so he is just so gentle with her. He sends Martha back. And Martha goes back to the house, calls Mary to one side, and she says, Jesus is here, and he is asking for you. He is asking for you. He's not demanding you come and see him. He's not angry that you haven't come out to see him already. He is asking for you. He wants to see you. And something inside Mary melts at that point. And as much as she is hurt and confused as to why Jesus has let her down like this, more than that, she just wants to be with him, wants to be comforted by him. And so she rushes out to see him. And when she gets there, there's no way she can keep it together like Martha did. And she just falls on the ground sobbing. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. If you cared for us at all, if you really loved us, Jesus, he would still be here. Have you ever had a thought like that? God, if you really love me, this would not have happened. If you really love me, I wouldn't have lost my job. If you really love me, I wouldn't be alone right now. If you really love me, I'd have a baby right now. If you really love me, doors will be opening up in my career. If you really love me, you would have healed my mum. If you really love me, I wouldn't be sick. Jesus, if you really love me, my brother would not have died. Have you ever been that honest with God before? Ever let him have it straight? Ever said what you really thought? Ever owned up to the sadness, confusion, even anger that you are feeling to him? Do you know that it's okay to do that? The Bible even encourages us to do that. Half of all of the Psalms, over half of them, are Psalms of lament. Psalms that say exactly this kind of thing. King David, described as a man after God's own heart, he wrote a lot of them. Psalms like Psalm 77. Imagine the pain that came for someone to write this. Will the Lord reject forever? Will he never show his face again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? These laments and others like them, they ask the difficult questions of God, but this is so important. They ask them to God in dialogue with him. And I think that the reason that God made sure that these Psalms ended up in the Bible is because he wants us to know that it's okay to say this kind of stuff, to be this honest. Too often we have this kind of whirling mess of pain and grief and confusion, and we've been tricked into thinking that we have to sort ourselves out before we can come to God, before we're acceptable to him. Friends, this is as crazy as thinking that the only time you can ever go and visit a doctor is when you're in perfect health. The whole point of visiting a doctor is to get well again. That is what God is here for us. The whole point of coming to God is so that he can help us, he can heal us, he can help us move through our grief. We just can't do this by ourselves. And this story shows the reaction we're going to get from God when we do that. Just look at Jesus with Mary. He doesn't rebuke her for daring to question him. He doesn't try and put her loss into some bigger perspective, talk theology at her. He doesn't even say to her, Mary, doesn't really matter. A few moments' time, I'm going to raise your brother. It's all going to be okay. No, Jesus does the one thing that we should all do when confronted with our friend's loss. He weeps. Jesus, the King of heaven, the Lord of creation, the one in just a few minutes' time is going to perform this amazing miracle and raise her brother from the dead. He sits and stops and enters into Mary's pain, and he feels it with her and he weeps with her. He joins her there in the dead space, in the place of no hope, in the valley of the shadow of death, and he waits and he weeps. Jesus then asks Mary to show him the grave. He wants her to show him. He communicates to her that he wants to know, he wants to understand what she is going through. And this isn't because he doesn't know that he's Jesus. It's because he wants her to know that he knows. And that's why God wants us to talk to him about all of this stuff, about how we're feeling, about how something has affected us, about the questions that we have. Not because he doesn't know that, he knows that already. But he wants us to know that he knows, because I think that as much as we think that we need answers for why something has happened, as much as we think that knowing the why will help us deal with the grief, what we really need is to be known, to be understood, to have someone say, I see you. I see the pain that you are in. I validate that pain. I acknowledge it. And more than that, I feel it too. Which is why listening to people as they express their grief, even just being there with them as they weep, is way more important than coming up with wise things to say. The night Jax and I lost our baby, we got home from A&E at about 3 a.m, and Jax was just exhausted, as you can imagine, physically, emotionally exhausted. And with all the painkillers she'd been taking, we got in and she pretty much passed out. And I was just left there, literally in the darkness, alone, utterly devastated. And so I called up my best friends. It's like 4 a.m. at this point. I said, you're going to need to come over. And they did. Jumped straight in a car, drove straight over. And they just sat with me and drank tea, which is obviously a very British way of dealing with this kind of thing. And they were just there as I wept. They didn't have anything kind of wise to say, didn't offer any words, didn't try and explain anything. They were just with me as I wept. And God was present with them. Friends, the God who loves us is a God who feels our pain, a God who weeps with us, a God who waits with us in that darkest of place. And it's when we come to know this and trust this that we can come to him to help us grieve. We don't have to sort it out by ourselves. We can come to him and we can find in him a peace that transcends, that supersedes, that goes beyond needing to understand, a peace that can heal. So Mary is this great example of someone who grieves her loss well. She makes the time to grieve and she takes her grief to Jesus. And I found this to be just great advice for any loss that I have suffered. We need to grieve all of our losses in this way, whether that's like the big thing like the loss of a baby or a smaller thing like friends moving out of London. Whenever we face loss, no matter how big, no matter how small, if we want to remain emotionally healthy, if you want to stop ourselves becoming bitter, which is really easy to do when we lose things, if we want our faith in the goodness of God to grow and not shrink, if we want to become more emotionally people for those around us, if we want to be able to comfort other people with the comfort that we ourselves have received, then I think it's really helpful to deal with each and every loss in this way. Set aside time to really grieve the loss, time to talk with friends, time to journal, and then time to pray, to talk it out with God, to let him know how you feel and let him bring the healing. But this story teaches us something also incredibly important. And that is with Jesus, our losses, the deaths that we suffer, they are not final. With Jesus, no death is the end. With Jesus, there is hope for new beginnings. Because the whole point of this story, the whole reason that Jesus didn't come when they first asked him to do, he waited until Lazarus was dead, he allowed this death to happen, was so that we might come to know him as the resurrection and the life. When Jesus first hears about Lazarus being sick, he says, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." What does he mean by that? Well, Mary, Martha, Lazarus, the disciples, everyone, they lived in this world where dead things stay dead, where there was no way through death, where there was no reversal of death. And they may have believed that Jesus was able to heal. They may have believed that he was able to press pause on death for a while. But as far as they knew, death was always the end. But then Jesus came and he changed everything. Because Jesus wasn't just a prophet, wasn't just a holy man, wasn't just a teacher, wasn't even just a miracle worker. Jesus was and is the resurrection and the life. And whoever believes in him will live again, even though they may suffer hundreds, thousands of deaths in this lifetime. And whoever lives by believing in him will never truly die. That is what it means for Jesus to be glorified, for people to understand, to see him as he really is, and to trust that he's able to do everything he said he can do. The story of Lazarus shows us not only will Jesus bring us comfort in our pain, not only will he help us as we grieve and bring healing, but he is able to restore to us the things that we have lost. Because of Jesus, death is now no longer the end. It's no longer the final end to our physical death. There is hope for all of us for an embodied eternity in paradise with him, in the new heavens, the new earth. But also the smaller deaths that we suffer, the losses that we're experiencing, they're not the end either. If we trust in him, if we allow him to work in us, he's able to bring about resurrection life in those deaths too. Now, I'm not saying that our reversals will be as dramatic as Lazarus's. I'm not guaranteeing that we will get back like for like as Mary and Martha did. Actually, the end of our story is that Jax and I now have two beautiful little girls. It's just God's grace upon us. And that's not my promise to you. I can't promise what God is going to do for you, but I can promise that Jesus is able to bring back the parts of your heart that have died when loss happened. He is able to restore joy and hope. He's able to restore faith in the goodness of God. He's able to restore dreams that you may have left behind because they seem dead and buried. He's able to raise our expectations for what God can and will do through us. How do we get there? We have to roll away the stones. Did you notice in the story that Jesus didn't move the stone away from the tomb? He asks Mary and Martha to get that done. This is their brother. This is their grave. Everyone would have been looking at them when Jesus said, "Roll away the stone." They wouldn't have done anything unless they had said so. And remember what Martha says? "But Lord, by this time there will be a bad smell, for he has been there 4 days." Jesus, she's saying, "Lazarus is dead. He's buried. He's gone. It's over. We're moving on. Just forget about it. There's nothing you can do now. All you're going to do by opening up this tomb is bring us face to face with the reality of our death. The stench of death. That's all you're going to do. All you're going to do is cause more pain. Just let it go, Jesus. We've moved on. Just move on." You ever had a thought like that? Maybe you feel the same way about revisiting the losses you suffered. What good can possibly come from thinking about this again, from dredging all this up again, from praying about this again? All it's going to do is cause me more pain. All it's going to do is bring me back face to face with the pain of that death in the first place. It's dead. It's buried, Jesus. Just leave it be. If that is you, if that is how you are feeling, remember again the words of Jesus. "Did I not tell you," he says, "that if you believe, you will see the glory of God. If you trust in him, you will see his glory revealed in your life. Friends, Jesus is inviting you this evening to roll away the stone, to trust him enough to revisit the dead spaces, the pain in your life. And his promise to you is that as you do that, you will see the glory of God revealed. You will come to know Jesus, the resurrection and the life, bring resurrection and life to you. Maybe if I can have the band back. So are there any losses that you have suffered that you know that you just haven't dealt with? The pain is still there. Jesus is inviting you this evening to roll away the stone. It may be painful. It may be really painful. I can almost guarantee you that it will be painful. But you can trust Jesus with your pain. You can trust him to deal with you so, so tenderly, just in the same way that he dealt with Mary and Martha. And then maybe you feel like you want to start or continue that process this evening. As Andy said, there'll be a prayer team after the service today. We would love to pray with you. My story is that several parts during my journey through this grieving process, it was in times of worship and when people were praying for me that a healing happened. Often that happens with tears. For me, I'm a bit of a crier. So when someone's praying for me, I cry. But that is part of the healing process. And just being in the presence of God is just an amazing thing for that. Just feeling him draw close, people praying for you is a really healing, restorative thing. So maybe that tonight you want to start or continue that process. Maybe actually you think, I need to deal with this stuff. I need to set aside some intentional time to do that. And I would really recommend you do that. You can do that on your own. I'd recommend as much as possible to do that also with people. I found that actually it's when you're talking to someone, explaining your grief to someone else, that the reality of it, the emotion of it starts to hit you that bit more. When you're by yourself, you can kind of detach yourself a little bit. But when you're saying something to someone and you see empathy in their face and you start to realize, actually, no, this is a serious thing I've been through, that actually that healing process can really, really happen. As Andy also mentioned, we have a pastoral support team. If you'd like 4 to 6 weeks chatting to someone about this kind of stuff, they would love to help you out in that way. You can get details from that from the prayer team, the welcome team, or just from our website. They would love to help you. Maybe tonight all this talk of loss and grief just hasn't connected with you. Maybe that's just not where you are right now. If that is you, can I encourage you to invest in the kinds of friendships where it's okay to call up one another at 4 a.m. and ask each other to come over and drink tea and cry? Because losses are going to happen and we need a community around us to help us through that. I mean, we want to be a community, don't we, where people feel safe to grieve, where people feel safe to be a mess for as long as it takes to be a mess, where people feel safe to voice their doubts, their frustration, even their anger at God. We want to be that community, don't we? And so if this isn't something that you're dealing with right now, invest in becoming that part of community. Should we stand? We're going to worship God together. I'm just going to pray. Father God, loving Father, you are just so tender towards us. Your heart for us is so big. I thank you, Lord, that you feel our pain. You don't just see it, you feel it. Lord, I thank you that the losses that we in this room have suffered, Lord, I thank you that you've seen them and you weep with us over them. And I thank you that you are able to heal us, to comfort us, to bring us through, to bring us to the other side of those deaths. And Lord, I pray right now, I pray for your spirit to fall. I pray that you would start right now that work of restoring people to wholeness and to health. And I pray as a community, we will be a community that is able to comfort others with the comfort that we have received from you. Jesus, I thank you that all of this is possible. This relationship with our Heavenly Father is possible because you suffered the ultimate death. You suffered a death that separated you. You bore that in our place, and now we get to enjoy all the benefits of that. Jesus, we love you so much. We thank you that you love us way more than we could ask or imagine. I pray, come start a work in us this evening. Amen.
Thank you for listening. For more information or for further podcasts and downloads, please visit christchurchlondon.org.